Live from Sacramento, California.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Featuring Damian Barling.
Yes, I absolutely still love Russell Westbrook. So what?
And Kenny Caraway.
Sometimes you're really just vibing out.
This is D-Lo and KC.
I'm the street's voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked.
On ESPN 1320.
Nipsey Hussle bringing us into this Friday afternoon. We appreciate you so much for being here with us on Sacramento's number one sports station. I'm Damian Barling. That is Kenny Caraway. We are D'Lo and KC. We appreciate you for tuning in. We appreciate Chris Biederman. He's going to be with us coming up at 12:25. Our final look at the 49ers versus the Giants. Also, Marshall Harris of CBS 13 will be with us for his weekly visit. Coming up at 1:30, Kyle Shanahan is officially named Nick Mullins the starter. George Kittle is out. That is all official. Another San Francisco team. Sorry to start the show this way on a Friday, partner, but it wasn't just a loss, man. That was a tough, tough loss. You've got the lead. The San Francisco Giants they got to be feeling good here at this point. And then they wind up dropping it in extra innings to the Rockies.
Well, I mean, Damian, if you ask me, that's a season-ending loss. That's the way I look at it. It's a season-ending loss. You had to win that one. Now you find yourself, if we're staying true to what I talked about, that they needed to finish the final 6-4-2, now you got to win 3 of the next 4 against San Diego.
Which is what you were talking about yesterday. Like, we could, that's why that win was so pivotal. Like, we can't be in that position to have to take 3 or 4 from this team that we're playing.
Yeah, man, just a tough blow. I mean, and one at bat in the 10th inning, you think Wilmer Flores hits a walk-off home run at the wall, and gets Dickerson to third and all this other stuff, and then an absolutely phenomenal play by Trevor Story to save the game. I think Dubon hit that one. Or no, it was Evan Longoria hit the rocket on the infield, and Trevor Story made a great play. And that really knocked the Giants out of playoff contention, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it didn't. It did, but it didn't. Like, they got some help last night.
They did. They did.
Brewers lost. It's good for them. Mm-hmm. The Phillies lost. They're still in position. They can still do it. They just, as you said, they've got to win big against the Padres. And this is kind of what we've been talking about since the Giants. We're talking a lot about a team that's barely, like, they're 500. Like, that's what the Giants are. But the circumstances of the season, the shortened season, and the expanded playoffs require attention here. And the fact is, everybody around them, they're the exact same. Yeah. Like, they're all 500 teams playing 500 baseball. So while the Giants have probably the most difficult opponent headed into the weekend, we're talking about a bunch of at best average teams heading into the final stretch of the season, to where, maybe if the Giants do go 2-for-4, it winds up being enough to get them into this wild card spot.
I mean, it could. You look around at the opponents, checking the schedule now or about to. I know the Brewers have the Cardinals. So that's not an easy opponent. I think I want to say the Reds play the Twins, if I'm not mistaken. So
as you're looking that up, 4 teams in the National League have clinched playoff spots. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, this is 4 of 8. The expanded playoffs are 16 teams, right?
Yeah.
So 4 of 8 in the National League have clinched. 7 of 8 in the American League have clinched. That is quite the discrepancy between the two leagues heading into the final weekend of the regular season.
It really is. And you talked about the Giants having the toughest opponent here this weekend. Well, I think they all got tough opponents. Giants got the Padres. Okay. The Phillies have the Tampa Bay Rays, who are the number one seed in the American League. Mm-hmm. The Reds have the Twins, who I think they're top four, I think, in the American League, maybe 4 or 5, something like that. And then the Brewers have the Cardinals, who have already clinched and going to be in the playoffs. So they're all playing playoff teams. Here's the road. They're going to need, number one, they're going to need some help, right? That's first and foremost. Number two, 4-game set, doubleheader today. If the Giants can get one of the next 3, neither one of these doubleheader games or the game on Saturday, just get one, that'll set you up for Sunday, where I think the San Diego Padres are going to play everybody for pretty much the whole weekend. Sunday, I don't think they play everybody. They're not going to have one of their top starters because they're going to start, whoever is in that rotation for that three-game series, they're not pinching on Sunday, obviously. So you're going up against a fourth or fifth starter. Even if you have the Tatises and the Machados playing, I don't think they go all nine innings. Sunday's an opportunity where you're going to be facing, you know, kind of a second string type situation. So if you can set yourself up with getting one of these first three games, you put yourself in a good position to come out with a split on Sunday and then getting a little bit of help. I think that's the scenario right there.
And I just want to make sure that we've got this laid out right. When you say that the Giants need help, it's not help to move up in the rankings. It's help because you think they're going to lose a few games to the Padres.
Definitely.
And you need the Brewers to lose a couple of games. You need the Phillies to lose a couple of games.
Yeah.
You need some of these. I mean, again, only four teams in the National League have clinched. Everybody else is just kind of bottlenecked there. And, I mean, there are a lot of teams competing for these four, you know, competing for these final four spots. And the Giants are one of them. They just need a couple of teams. I mean, the Brewers did them a favor yesterday. The Phillies did them a favor yesterday. Unfortunately, it was the Rockies that beat them. They still have a chance. I'm not down on it. I know mathematically, obviously, they still very much have a chance. But what we're doing is we're projecting our concerns about a very good team coming up in which they fared poorly against the last time they faced. Now, I ask you this. We often talk about athletes and psychology. Maybe it's working in the Giants' favor that they got it handed to them by the San Diego Padres the last time they played. And maybe it's like, yo, this team got us last time. We owe them one. You talked about receipts. You've got receipts that are, I believe one of them was 27 years old. If I recall correctly, you had a receipt from when you were 10 years old that you're ready to cash. Well, this series with the Padres was a couple of weeks ago, and this was at a time where wasn't the Padres series the COVID scare?
It was, yeah.
And then they followed that up with the trip to Seattle in which they had to hop on the plane and come right back.
Mm-hmm.
So they had in a Major League Baseball season that has been incredibly interesting. The San Francisco Giants had an incredibly interesting week within that season with the COVID scare and then the trip to Seattle and the air quality and having to come back and play the Seattle for a Mariners home game in San Francisco.
And that's what's going to happen. I don't quote me if it's all weekend, but I know today the Giants will be the visiting team at Oracle. So
yeah.
That'll be interesting to see.
That's logical. It isn't. What are they going to, what's that mean? They switch dugouts? Like, what does that mean? That's so dumb.
Well,
like,
there's
not
your,
like there are fans you, there.
You got your, you know, last at bat.
Okay. I guess from that sense, it matters. Do they wear different uniforms?
Against the Mariners, they didn't.
Do they have to sleep at uniforms? Like, hey, you guys are the away team. You can't sleep at home. You've got to stay at a hotel. You can't sleep at home.
You got to stay at a hotel. And the Padres are going to stay at your homes in the Bay Area.
That's a whole different dynamic there that we'll leave for another day at another time. We'll do that on an Instagram Live when we're having a couple of drinks or something. Make sure you're following us, by the way, at D'Lo and KC, both Twitter and Instagram, at ESPN 1320 on Twitter and Instagram. As we posted breaking news, Kyle Shanahan had a press conference just a little bit ago, announced Nick Mullins is going to be the starter for this coming week. No surprise there. Also, he acknowledged George Kittle will not play. He'll miss his second straight week. Again, no real surprise there.
No real surprise. No disrespect, but concern, right? Maybe because it's no surprise. We expected this. I know myself as a fan, mentally I game plan for it, so I know the team is game plan for it. They're ready to go without those guys, and they're ready to put out a winning game plan and a winning performance. They got to take care of the football. That's really the biggest thing. Even how bad I think the Giants are, or whatever the case may be, whatever. Injuries with them, with their team, whatever. You got to play a clean game. You got to play a clean game, and you got to jump on them early like you did with the Jets. Not give them any reason to believe that, hey, we can mess around and win this game.
I posted the clip at ESPN 1320 because it amused me. George Kittle spoke to the media yesterday, and he was asked, you know, what did you do Sunday when you couldn't play? He was like, well, I was watching the first quarter. I saw two injuries, so I went outside and did my rehab. I did my work because I figured I was bad luck. Like, it was bad luck to watch the 49ers on TV. So I stopped watching and went and did my rehab. And I thought, dude, George Kittle is like every fan ever.
Yeah.
Like he's probably got a lucky jersey and lucky socks and all sorts of different things. And he thought, oh, we've all done that where you turn on the game and, you know, the Kings or the 49ers or whoever your favorite team is winning, and you turn it on and all of a sudden the opponent goes on a run and now you're down three and you blame yourself and you go, I'm leaving. I should have never turned it on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, George, you're going to have to not watch again, on Sunday.
Yeah, don't watch this Sunday because, quite honestly, I don't know how many healthy bodies are left to survive a week like they had last week at MetLife Stadium. But Kyle Shanahan spoke today about how the team has responded to this difficult week that they've had.
I was real proud of the team, you know, on Sunday, and I think it's carried over into the week just by the type of practice that we had. It was a very eerie feeling in an empty stadium with no one there and no music. I mean, it was silent. And, you know, when Nick goes down, it gets even more silent because they turn off the ambient noise. You got to wait for the cart to come out. And it's just kind of an eerie feeling. And then for it to happen two plays later with Solly, and just how long it happened and just how weird the whole place is, it didn't totally feel like anything anyone's ever been a part of. What I loved about it was how our players responded the rest of that game. I mean, they had huge concerns. It was extremely awkward for everybody. But if you turned on the silent tape and watched how they played, you would have never known how it felt when we were there. That's also how I felt with practice this week, Wednesday, Thursday, and today. And that's how I expect to feel on Sunday.
You know, he brings up Solomon Thomas there. And I swear I saw a tweet come through. And I know this was part of Shanahan's press conference, which I missed some of as we were getting ready for today's show. But I read that they had to give... Yeah, here it is. Ziggy Ansah is going to wear number 94. That's Solomon Thomas's number. They're running out of numbers.
That's crazy.
Kyle Shanahan says the 49ers have retired too many numbers, so they've had to reuse numbers. Ziggy Ansah called Solomon Thomas to ask if he could wear number 94. Thomas said, no problem.
That sounds like a Boston Celtics problem. Don't they have like 90 retired jerseys?
Numbers?
They retire like... eighth guys on the bench numbers. It's ridiculous. Bring it back out.
They retire back out. Sentiment. Who doesn't? Is it Oakland? The Raiders don't retire jerseys. They don't retire numbers. And I don't think the Cowboys do either. The Cowboys have that.
The ring of
honor. Because everybody's worn 88 at this point. But yeah, they have the ring of honor, and that's where they put your name. But the 49ers do the jerseys, and it's coming to bite Kyle Shanahan's team in the butt right now as they're trying to get guys up.
Got
to
do what you got to do to get somebody on the field nowadays. Yeah, it's crazy. Damien, it's Friday. The Niners play on Sunday.
Yep.
It's a 49er Friday, baby.
Yes, sir.
Come on, man. Let's go, man. You see what I got going on. If you guys see the video, man, it's Joe Montana today out here, man. You know, I got the Montana red joint, you know, on right now. It's 49er Friday, baby. Let's go.
Okay. Well, let's go then. We got Chris Biederman joining us in a couple of minutes. Of course, he's the 49ers beat writer for Sacramento Bee. He's going to be with us at 12:25. And so much talk about who's not on the field for the San Francisco 49ers. How about who is? Nick Mullins, the starting quarterback this week, is pretty encouraged. You'll hear from him. Plus, week three got underway yesterday. We'll recap all of that. It's lots to do here. It's a busy Friday with dealing with KC on Sacramento's home of 49ers football, ESPN 1320.
You're listening to D'Lo and KC on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Ryan Fitzpatrick started yesterday's game 12 of 12 for 127 yards and two touchdowns, wound up finishing 18 of 20. And the Dolphins get the win 31-13 over the Jaguars. They go up to 1-2. I'm telling you, I don't think that team is awful. I know the Jaguars are bad, and this is... not a measuring stick game. I don't think the Dolphins are awful.
Do you see me giving you the Stephen A. Smith?
Bro, you...
You guys can't see it on radio. This is bad radio, but yeah, I'm just...
You know what happens when you do this? Looking. I'm going to screenshot this and put it out there to the world. We're going to put these on T-shirts at some point, too.
I would love to put this one on T-shirts.
They're not that bad, bro. I'm telling you. They're not.
Damien, I stay true to my word. I told you guys earlier in the week what was going to happen to me on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
Everything but watching that NFL game. And I stayed true to my word. I didn't see not one single second of that game. At this point, I haven't even seen a highlight. I don't know what jerseys they were wearing.
Okay. Well, you missed James Robinson had a good day.
Okay. Is he on any? Is he on a fantasy team? What are we looking at here?
Well, he's on somebody's fantasy team, and whoever it is, that person is very, very happy.
Why do they keep doing this to us? Why does this have to be on Thursday?
Well, I know.
Why wasn't
this
in England?
I can tell. They can't travel, which is why. I don't know if you know this. Americans have been barred from other countries, so we're not allowed to go anywhere else and play. But I think they put the Dolphins-Jaguars on game, the Dolphins-Jaguars game on early, because this was an NFL Network-only game. It wasn't on Fox yet. Even though it was Joe and Troy, it wasn't on Fox yet. I think they're getting the garbage NFL Network games, like the garbage Thursday night games, out of the way before they move to Fox.
I hear you. I hear you, but this one
it's a guess.
This one should not have been in America. Just shouldn't have been in America.
Okay.
I mean, well, look, if we can't leave, then do like college basketball and put it in South Dakota.
Okay.
Why am I subjected to only having to watch this game?
Every team has to play on a Thursday. It's the rule.
Yeah.
I'm making rules. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't get my Nielsen rating. I know that much.
Okay, you don't get Nielsen ratings, and I thought for sure you were going to check in. Like I thought, like, oh, you're full of crap. You're going to check in at least once.
In full transparency. I didn't even think twice about that game, and then I think Lakers Nuggets went to halftime, and I was like, oh, okay. Maybe I'll check it out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll see what the score is. You know, maybe I'll catch a third down play or something like that. And then they were on commercial too. And then I moved on with my life.
You haven't seen Ryan Fitzpatrick's chest hair yet?
No.
Yeah, it was up there with the who'd he have? Did he have Deshaun Jackson's outfit on?
Yeah.
That one game he had.
Yeah, when he looked like Conor McGregor.
Yeah, so it was in the same vein. He's very much in the, and I don't remember if they pointed this out. By the way, what church is Michael Irvin preaching at? Like he looked like every pastor out of a church
of Beijing Black. That's where he's teaching.
Oh man, I was like,
the
yo,
Beijing
and he's
Black be going hard on the hairline.
Man. Oh yeah, he's got that. For those who don't know what Beijing is, it's I don't want to call it a pro. It's basically paint. Yeah. Carlos Boozer,
Carlos Boozer is the most famous.
Carlos Boozer one day showed up just with a pitch black hit, and it was so great watching it because this was a nationally televised game. He went from like just a bald cut, just a clean bald cut, to all of a sudden having like this black paint
on his head.
That's
what made that crazy, because we talk about Michael Irvin. At least it's just his hairline, right?
Yeah.
Boozer did his whole head.
His entire head. And he couldn't towel his head down because he would be wiping the paint off.
Yeah.
So when he'd go to commercial, he would just tap. He would just like tap his face with the towel, keeping it as far away from his head as possible.
I heard him on a podcast one time talk about that. You know, he told the story of that. And he was very self-aware and laughed at it and said, man, it was a mistake. He's like, I knew it was a mistake in warm-ups when I started sweating and it was going to be a long day. So he had a good time with it. It was a pretty cool story.
I'm going to try to, I'm going to tag you in a picture so you could see. I feel like we should all experience it. Cause it's something. I mean, it's not, it's something. I mean,
it's an all-timer. Matter of fact, Sacramento King, family, however you want to say it, right? We're all a Kings family. John Wilson, that was part of a bet. Like, I think if I committed to, if the Kings made the playoffs, that I would do a Boozer this past year.
Oh,
obviously I lost. Oh. I don't have to do a Boozer, but that was part of the bet. I was
gonna do a solid Boozer. So you would have to grow your hair out a little bit.
That's the scary part.
And then hit the Beijing.
Oof. And for me, that's the scary part. Having to grow that hair out a little bit.
Can we up the ante and do a Beijing? Can we get a low cut beard and then hit the paint on the beard line too?
Well, then you're getting into Ray Lewis territory.
Yeah.
Ray Lewis went Beijing on the beard quite often.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys do, though. You know, when we see, like, I think Khaled does it, you know, when you see the crispest line ever in a beard, There's a little Beijing going on there.
I think Mike Tomlin hits a...
You think so? I think Mike Tomlin's clean. I think he's clean.
Is he?
Because it's not that full, so he doesn't have to do it. Like when it goes
like hairline, like either that or he's got the cold. He's got the coldest barber in.
I'm gonna have to study it now.
Yeah, you'll take a. That's your guy. Take a look at it.
Study that.
There's a lot of talk about who is on the field this weekend, or who isn't on the field this weekend for the San Francisco 49ers. Nick Mullins spoke to the media today, and he wanted to talk about who was on the field. He's got big praise for the guys around him.
Coach Shanahan said it. We got 53 really, really good football players on our team, and they're on the roster for a reason. They've proved that. You know, Hasty and Jeff Wilson, Hasty had a great camp, caught people's eye very quick. And then Jeff, you know, he's earned every bit of what he got. He started on practice squad last year, and you know, just every opportunity he has stepped up. And then Jet, you know, I can't wait for him to get the carries that he's going to get. He's earned every bit. Got a great story. And then coolest thing about last week is Ayuk, when he finished the game, he was so excited to get back out there. That was really cool. Man, I can't wait to get back out there for next Sunday. And so to see the energy behind those guys is awesome.
One thing that I really love about Nick Mullins right now is he still has that giddiness when he talks to the media, because it's really, I mean, I know he's been a starting quarterback before during, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's down years, and maybe he's just a giddy guy, period. But he has a certain excitement in his voice when
he's wide-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And he's saying the right things. He's, you know, he's talking about his team. He knows he's going out there. He's not, you know, hopefully he knows the ideal scenario is. He's not out there next week.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the ideal scenario that many of those guys aren't out there next week, though it's going to vary by position, particularly with the running back position. It looks like a couple of those guys are going to be out there. As Chris Biederman, the 49ers beat writer, is going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. But I like Nick Mullins, man. I'm happy for him. He's excited. He's got that.
I love that, man. I love his excitement.
And he's going against the Giants.
You got to be excited about that.
I mean, it's not like he... I don't know. I'm curious. I would love to know. Obviously, there's no way to measure this. Does he have that same sound knowing that, like, he's going against the Baltimore? You know what I mean? Like, or if he was going against a different team, if he was potentially going against, say, Kansas City.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, I might have to put up 40. You know what I mean? I might have to put up 45 to get the win. He could go in a little bit more loose and a little bit relaxed going, okay, we're favored to win.
Right.
We're expected to win.
That might even be a little more pressure, though. You go up against a Kansas City or Baltimore with all the injuries. I mean, you're not going to be expected to win. You know, just go out there and fly by the seat of your pants. Now, I mean, this would be a complete embarrassment. I shouldn't say that because it's a lot of second stringers on that offensive unit. But it would be pretty close to embarrassing if you lost to the Giants. So maybe that's a little more pressure.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose. I guess it could be. I just envision a scenario where he comes in, he's kind of relaxed, he's got, okay, don't fall on your face, get into the flow, like, get comfortable, or maybe don't fall on your face is the wrong, don't make mistakes.
Yeah.
Right? Just get in here, get comfortable with your offense. You're going to have running backs that are going to be finding their position. The whole other side of the ball is going to be trying to figure out, you know, kind of what to do here. So let's just settle in. Let's get comfortable. We're going against a football team that's missing their primary weapons. Like, we've got a chance here. Let's just relax and get moving, and let's get some of those guys that I just propped up there in my press conference. Let's get them involved nice and early.
I think Nick Mullins is ready for this. You look at somebody like Nick Mullins, and I really believe, and this is like no shade. I don't think there's any, you know, heat. You know, there's no ill will with Jimmy or nothing like that. It's just his competitive nature. When I talk about Nick Mullins, he thinks he's better than Jimmy Garoppolo. He thinks Nick Mullins really believes he's a starting quarterback in this league. And I remember seeing, there's something that always stuck out to me about Nick Mullins. Ever since the first time I saw him, it was a preseason game. He came back in the fourth quarter and beat the Dallas Cowboys in preseason. And it was just something that stuck out. And then he came out, he did that to the Raiders, beat them up. You know what I mean? And then Seattle. Like, I think he really believes, like, no, I just need an opportunity. I'm nice. Mm-hmm. I just need an opportunity. I think he really believes that. And I know it sounds simple. You know, you're like, oh, he's in the NFL. He should believe that. You'd be surprised how many pro athletes are just kind of like, ah, I'm good being a backup. I'm good here. This is where I'm at. You know, this is my role. I think he really looks at it like, yo, I should be a starter. This is my opportunity to show everybody I should be a starter. I like that.
He's still a young guy. Was it fourth season?
Yeah, I think 2018. I think it might have been his rookie year. So this would be 2018, 19, 20, this third year.
Let's bring in Chris Biederman. He knows, 49ers beat writer for the Sacramento Bee. Hey, Chris, is this the fourth year for Nick Mullins?
Yes, he was. He came in with Kyle Shanahan in 2017.
Got it.
As an undrafted rookie. So this is his fourth year in the system.
That's all we wanted. Thanks for joining us, Chris. We appreciate it.
Glad I could help.
Proper introduction here, the 49ers beat writer for the Sacramento Bee. What in a comfortable situation going against the New York Giants versus going against potentially a team like, you know, maybe the Baltimore Ravens or the Kansas City Chiefs? Do you get that same feel? We just played clips of him talking about, you know, the guys who are going to be on the field with him. He talked about his running backs and some of the wide receivers. And, you know, he's just got that, I'm so happy to be here, I can't wait to get on the football field sound.
Yeah, that's sort of how he is. I think the challenge, or I guess the what's good for the 49ers this week is they're not exactly going against the juggernaut of an offense in New York, in that, you know, they're without Saquon Barkley. They're playing Daniel Jones, a second-year quarterback, and they're a little bit banged up at receiver, too. So I think the 49ers believe that defensively they're going to be in a good spot, and then that means they're not going to need, you know, a 35-point performance from Nick Mullins in the offense. Kyle Shanahan did say some interesting things about the Giants' defense and how stingy they've been through their first 2 weeks. The numbers have been pretty good for the Giants' defense. So it is going to be, I think, a pretty low-scoring game on Sunday, but I think your point's a good one in that it's probably good for Nick Mullins to be going against an 0-2 team rather than, you know, an elite team like Baltimore, as you said.
Chris, in the first time we saw Nick Mullins when he stepped in the year Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, he had some high highs and some low lows, I felt like. You know, when you talk about the Raiders game where he balled out, winning against Seattle for the first time in, I think, 10 matchups, he was the one to get it done. Then he had some lows. The Tampa Bay game was ugly. The first Seattle game was ugly as well. Is there anything that can be drawn upon from the type of quarterback he is from those 8 games that he played, or is this a completely new quarterback, more mature quarterback?
I think he can draw on that experience. Like he can know what it's like to be a starter and have, you know, preparation time during the week of practice with the starting unit, and game planning and all of that stuff. All that stuff he'll benefit from, certainly. I don't know that he's going to be a markedly different player than he was back then. I think the offense is mostly the same. His skill position guys are obviously going to be a little bit different because of all the injuries. He won't have George Kittle, who was obviously a huge part of that offense in 2018 when he had close to 1,400 yards, setting that tight end record. But, you know, I'm curious to see what Mullins is going to be like, because I do think he – you know, Kyle Shanahan really loves Mullins for his preparation and how much, you know, he knows the offense and all of that. So from an operational standpoint, I think the offense is going to run well. But, you know, I don't know, you know, is Brandon Ayuk going to come out and, you know, have a big game like the 49ers might need him to? That remains to be seen. Mullins does have a good relationship with Kendrick Bourne on the field, and Bourne was obviously there back in 2018 too, and one of his go-to weapons. Trent Taylor's been around for a while, so he's a guy that he'll be comfortable with. But no, I honestly don't really know what to expect from Mullins in this game. I do think the 49ers probably have a better chance of winning this game than maybe people in New York would think, just given all the injury issues facing the 49ers. And I think what helps the 49ers pretty substantially is the fact that they do have so much continuity, and so many of the guys that are going to be playing, even though they aren't starters, are guys who have been in the system before. So I'm curious to see what Jordan Reed looks like out there again for a second straight week. You know, Jerick McKinnon, the running back situation is going to be unique this week because they're not going to have Raheem Mostert or Tevin Coleman, their top two rushers so far this season. So there's a lot stacked against Nick Mullins at this point, but he is going up against an 0-2 team, and his supporting cast is largely created by, you know, consists of guys that that have been in the system before like he has.
Chris Biederman with us here on ESPN 1320. I'm glad you mentioned Jerick McKinnon. I've, you know, Kyle Shanahan made it a point when he talked about Raheem Mostert's injury on Sunday to say he aggravated his knee on the turf. We know Jerick McKinnon's injury history. Are we going to see him step in as the primary running back this week on that turf?
Yeah, you know, I asked Kyle Shanahan pretty much that exact question, and he said, you know, the way McKinnon's talking, the way the doctors and the performance staff have been talking, they're expecting McKinnon to be fine and to be able to handle, a load commensurate with a starter in the offense. So I'm curious to see how that's going to shake out. You know, McKinnon was somebody who the team said would have been fully cleared last November. So it's not like he's just coming off the injury last year. He had a few extra months to rehab and start working out before the off-season program. So by all accounts, he is healthy and he is in good shape. And I think you can see that by some of the explosiveness he's put on tape so far this season, particularly, you know, 3rd and 31 with that 55-yard run last week. And he's already scored a couple of touchdowns. So it's going to be really interesting because going back to 2018 when the 49ers first signed McKinnon in training camp, he was lining up all over the field. He was, you know, being used in the slot. He was really going to be a focal point of that offense. And I think one of the reasons why the offense struggled in Jimmy Garoppolo's first three starts in 2018 was because they weren't used to not having McKinnon out there because he was going to be such an important piece of that offense. So now, a couple years later, I know Garoppolo is not going to be out there, obviously, but getting McKinnon back in sort of that that role that maybe Kyle Shanahan envisioned having when they gave him that $30 million contract in 2018, it could be something unique and something that the Giants might not be totally prepared for. So I think it's going to be that unknown factor, I guess, is going to be an advantage for Shanahan and his offensive assistants. And like you guys, I'm curious to see how that's going to work itself out.
Chris, I want to stay with the running backs for just a second because one guy that I have my eye on, they got a lot of buzz in training camp that will be getting called up due to the injuries, is Jamichael Hasty. And I want to know, because we didn't see any preseason, obviously, just the reporters were seeing training camp. He got rave reviews for, you know, some of his reps and the things that he was doing out there. Did you see it the same way? Are you kind of intrigued by what he might be able to do in a game situation now as well?
Yeah, you know, I thought Hasty would actually make the team over Jeff Wilson Jr. coming out of camp. I was one of the people who agreed with that idea that he did have a really good camp. But I thought he was sort of similar to McKinnon in that he was a tougher cover in the passing game than maybe the 49ers' other running backs. And you know, he's shifty, he's quick, he's a good route runner. It seems like he has good enough hands. And he seems sort of perfect for that third down back that the 49ers didn't really have last year. And obviously McKinnon sort of took over that role during the first 2 weeks. But I think Hasty is going to be an interesting guy. I wouldn't look for him to have too many snaps on Sunday. I think he would probably be that third down back potentially, you know, on third and long, somebody who they run a draw to or, you know, try a screen here and there. But I think Hasty is, you know, just given how good Kyle Shanahan and running backs coach Bobby Turner are at identifying undrafted running backs and turning them into solid contributors, I think you probably have to give him the benefit of the doubt with somebody like Hasty, particularly given the way he looked in training camp. So, yeah, there was no preseason, and I think he would have got a ton of carries in preseason, and he would have been a candidate to be one of those guys that fans sort of went nuts for because they tend to talk a lot about the guys who get a ton of carries and are really productive in the second half of preseason games. And I think that would have been Hasty this year. I think he's going to be on the field. He's certainly going to have a role. How big of a role, I think, depends on how many carries they want to give Jeff Wilson Jr. and McKinnon. But I'm with you in that. I'm intrigued by his skill set and potentially his fit in the offense for sure.
You and our guy Kyle Mattson host a podcast, Candlestick Chronicles. I was listening to a recent episode, and despite how catastrophic last week felt, you're not of the mindset that the current 49ers position in terms of injuries is going to derail their season.
Yeah, well, it depends if they get everybody back, right? So if you look at not this week, but going forward, eventually Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be back. George Kittle was close to playing this week. They obviously decided to keep him out because of the field turf situation. You're probably going to get Richard Sherman back at some point. Debo Samuel sounds like he's going to come back at least in practice next week, which means he could be questionable to play next week against the Eagles. So, you know, you look at all those injuries and all those guys potentially coming back, you know, the 49ers, even without Nick Bosa, would have one of the better rosters in the NFC. And so, you know, you keep that in mind and just how good those guys are and how much continuity the team already has. The 49ers are not going to be an easy out. And the reason why I think there's more reason for optimism this year than there would be maybe in a normal season is because you have seven playoff teams in each conference now. And the Rams last year would have been in the playoffs under this new format because they finished 9-7. So there are going to be teams that are hovering around the 500 mark that are going to be in that playoff mix. And so if the 49ers can win some of these winnable games against, you know, the Giants, their next three opponents are 1-6 combined. So if the 49ers can win those games and overcome some of these injury issues, they're going to be right in the thick of things. And then if they start to get healthy, then you know, they could be a really tough team for opponents to beat. And that's obviously going to take the offense getting better to make up for the regression of the defense. But on the other hand, the real concern, I think, for me going forward now is the status of Dee Ford, because without Nick Bosa, you might be able to patch together a good pass rush, or at least a good enough pass rush, if you have Dee Ford in the mix, because we've seen Dee Ford, like in 2018, you know, have a double-digit sack season and help Kansas City's defense force a bunch of turnovers with pressure. And also he led the league in forced fumbles that season. If Ford can ever come back from this back injury, then I think the 49ers might be better off than a lot of people think. The problem is back injuries are obviously really problematic, and the 49ers don't have a good history with players dealing with back injuries in recent history. And most notably is Jalen Hurd, obviously, who missed all of last season after sort of being week to week in the first month or so of his back issues dating back to last August. So I do think if they can get all of their guys back healthy, they will be a tough team to beat, and they will be in the playoff mix for sure, just given that, you know, there's seven teams in each conference. But a lot of it comes down to Dee Ford's health, in my opinion.
Tremendous insight as always, Chris. We appreciate you for joining us, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. 49ers beat writer for the Sacramento Bee and co-host along with Kyle Mattson of the Candlestick Chronicles. Great stuff from him.
Absolutely, man. And hey, Jared McKinnon. Opportunity.
Oh, man.
Opportunity. I know how you feel.
I know. Man, if my only thing with that is if Kyle Shanahan hadn't, he specifically, and I understand this is in the heat of the moment. You go back to Sunday, you remember the feeling like Bosa goes down, Solomon Thomas goes down, and it's like, yo, what the hell? Like, Raheem Mostert's not coming back. Jimmy Garoppolo's staying in the locker room. Like, yo, what is going on here? And you have Fred Warner, Eric Armstead. Eric Armstead was tweeting about turf before he ever got to the podium. So it was a conversation in the locker room. So I get the, you know, that emotional reaction from Kyle Shanahan. But he comes out and he's like, yeah, you know, we don't have quite the same diagnosis on Raheem Mostert as we do some of these other guys, but, you know, he aggravated his knee on the turf. That's what he said.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I don't want to put Jerick McKinnon in that position. I understand. The doctors say he's good. He says he's good. Everybody says he's good. You got to go him out. You got to throw him out there and let him play football. He played on the turf last week and was okay. But if we're talking about a situation where I think he had last week was week two. He had three carries in week two. I think he had three carries in week one. Mm-hmm. I'm just concerned with Coleman gone, with Raheem Mostert gone. Are we looking at a situation with him now as potentially the prime running back? And I think what did Raheem Mostert have? Like eight carries in the first half last week. He had 15 in week one. I don't want to see him in that situation where he's touching the ball that many times. I want to get your thoughts on that. We got more 49ers to talk about. We've got to talk about the Lakers. They went up 3-1. Oh, and the free throw discrepancy is getting talked about. That's all coming up here on D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC on the home for 49ers football. ESPN 1320. D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Thrilled you made us a part of your Friday. If you missed any part of today's show, download the radio.com app. If you're a 49er fan and you missed our conversation with Chris Biederman, you're going to want to hear that. Good thing for you, we're DVRing the whole show, so you could just download the radio.com app. Use the rewind feature there at the bottom of your screen. Scroll back to 12:30. We even time mark everything for you, and that's the start of our conversation with Chris Biederman. We were talking about Jerick McKinnon before the break. Kenny, and I want to get your thoughts on him and him potentially having a big workload coming up this weekend at MetLife Stadium, but I want to get to these phone lines. 916-349-1320. Sam, we appreciate your call. What's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, Sam?
Well, I'm kind of with you on the concern for McKinnon. I'm hoping maybe we'll see it by committee, you know, and, you know, we're probably going to rush the ball 40 times, but I'm hoping that's, you know, spread out pretty well amongst the other guys. Maybe Juszczyk gets a few more carries than normal.
Yeah.
And I also think Mullins is going to prove himself to be a capable backup. You know, last week I called you guys with my stone-cold luck, and it wasn't such a great pick. I had them winning, but I didn't think they'd cover. So this week I think I'm just going to take the win.
There you go.
Got one more thing for you guys, if I could, real quick.
Absolutely.
Tuned in late on Wednesday, and as you guys were signing off, you were given the news of the Breonna Taylor. And I had not heard it yet. Obviously, very disappointing. By the way, I think everything you said was right on point. You know, one of the things I said when I talked to you guys last week was I enjoyed the show because it's smart and the content is good, and everything I heard on Wednesday confirmed that. You know, so I just want to say thanks for using your platform and thanks for staying vigilant. And, you know, that's all I got. I hope you guys have a great weekend.
We hope you have a great weekend, too, Sam. Yeah, we appreciate that.
Don't be a stranger, man. Hit us up any and all the time, man, for sure.
Those subjects are always difficult to cover because they're so polarizing. But, you know, I've said for years on a podcast platform, you do the same thing with J Street Vibes. Like, we don't say things for you to agree with us. We say things for you to listen to us. And just like Sam called, you can call. You can disagree. We try to keep most of our topics focused on the 49ers and the Kings and stuff that's a little bit more lighthearted than what Sam was referencing there. But those topics are open for any other thing we talk about, including Jerick McKinnon. Sam has the same concerns I do about Jerick McKinnon. You know, we're hoping for the running back by committee. And again, this is a situation where we've seen him carry a total of six times, I think, roughly six times in the first 2 weeks of the season. And now you lose, you know, two guys who got more carries than you in the previous two games. Now you lose both of them. You're bringing guys up from the practice squad and different things like that. You're going to see guys get action for the first time. And you and I both, before the season started, you and I were really amped up on seeing Jerick McKinnon. And I would love to see a lot more of Jerick McKinnon next week in Levi Stadium. And you know, Kyle Shanahan did a great job. You heard the clip earlier. Hopefully you did here. This is Kyle Shanahan talking about, hey, you know, we've got to put things behind us. We've got to move on. And, you know, it was a conversation on Sunday. We had a little conversation on Monday about the turf. Now, like, it's behind us. We're playing on it. We've got to get it out of our head. But with Jerick McKinnon and having 3 years of rehabs and surgeries and all of that stuff, it's like, okay, yeah, cool. Let's throw him out there for like six carries, you know, which is double his workload from last week. But, you know, I get he's a ball player. It's a contact sport. It's a collision sport, as Marshall Harris, who's going to join us in 40 minutes, always says. I want to do the best to protect him because I think he's a great ball player still.
I understand your concerns. I understand your feelings. I feel the same way. I'm going to watch every carry from him. Like, you know, with peeking through my hands, being covered over my eyes. I completely agree. But at the same time, Damian, can't play scared, can't coach scared. If Jerick McKinnon is cooking and you need to get 12, 15 carries, 20 carries from him or whatever.
Okay.
If he's got 20, I'm not trying to give him 20, but if that's where you got to go to get this win, and he's telling you, I feel good or whatever the case may be, you can't coach scared.
You're right, but I don't think a 49er running back is getting 20 touches.
Some would argue Raheem should be getting 20 when he comes back. But you're right. You're right. I understand what you're saying.
He looked like week one, that was one of the conversations. It feels like Raheem Mostert is going to be the primary running back, but we don't really know. And then, you know, he comes in there. He has the week one that he has. He starts week two in the dramatic fashion that he does. And it looks like, okay, the 49ers have their guy. And, of course, it gets cut off at halftime. And, by the way, he still has a pretty productive half.
Yeah, got one 76-yard touchdown called back, I think, for a hold that didn't even need to happen. Like, he's a playmaker. Like, he is a playmaker. For a long time, I worried about the 49ers. Like, this was kind of before the Shanahan era, but it felt like to score, it had to be a 10-play drive. Or they didn't have anybody that could take it from the opponent's 30 or from your own 30 to the house. Like, they didn't have nobody like that, and they got somebody like that. Okay. Yeah. With Raheem Mostert, it don't matter where he's at on the field, where the ball's at on the field, he can go to the house at any moment, and that's a big weapon to have.
They might have two guys like that. Who and Jerick McKinnon. I'm thinking Jerick McKinnon.
See, I don't think so. People got on me last week a little bit because I said,
including
McKinnon,
me, me.
I said he didn't, you know, he looks like a shell of himself when it comes to the explosiveness. I think he can still cut, you know, explosiveness maybe wasn't the right word. He can make a quick move and get away. He can't break away anymore and run away from people. I don't think he has that in him anymore.
Okay.
So I don't think he has it. I mean, Raheem Mostert's one of the fastest people in the league. Obviously, he don't have it like him. But no. I don't even think he had it like he used to have it.
I looked at the 55-yard play again after you tweeted that. And I was trying to figure out, okay, did he slow down or was it angles? Like, what was it? And I wasn't able to draw a conclusion. So I'm just like, okay, I'm going to let that one go. If you want to be infuriated.
He looked good on the touchdown, though. I mean, he exploded and sprinted to the end zone on that one. So I'll give him that. Maybe he's not a shell of himself. Maybe that was unfair to say. But I don't think he can go to the house from his own 30 anymore.
In basketball, you so often hear, you hear this in reference to De'Aaron all the time, the first step, how that first step is going to get you past. So some defenders need like 2-3 steps to get past the defender. Yeah. Or some ball carriers need 2 or 3 steps to get past their defender. But the great ones or the truly, truly speedy ones need one. De'Aaron needs one. Jerick McKinnon still has that first step. Like, he still has that first movement that could blow. But like, if someone gets past the offensive line and is looking to get him in the backfield, he could get that first step and get away. Yeah. It's just, does he still have that explosiveness once he gets 5 yards out, once he gets 10 yards out? And that's just stuff we might not even know that yet. Like, that might not be stuff we know for a little bit. We'll talk a lot more 49ers here in the second hour. Again, we're so happy that you're here with us. 916-349-1320. It's a 49er Friday. It's a football Friday. We'll preview all of the marquee games coming up. You're listening to D'Lo and KC on KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento, a radio.com sports station driven by Lasher's Elk Grove Dodge. I'm Damian Barling. That is Kenny Caraway. Marshall Harris coming up at 1:30 for our Friday Five. It's a new little segment we're introducing here. It's really just our regular conversation with Marshall Harris. It's just a way to get to neutral corners quicker by having the Friday Five segment between you two.
Well, I appreciate Marshall coming on here and taking it upon himself to get educated. You know what I'm saying? I mean, not everybody takes that opportunity. So people get stubborn and, they don't want to learn. I appreciate that Marshall said, I want to learn. I'm going on D'Lo and KC, and I'm talking to KC so I can learn something. Kudos to him.
I'm going
to
be clear. Marshall said nothing of that sort, but I'm sure everybody will recognize that when he joins us coming up at 1:30. Lakers take a 3-1 lead, and all of the responsible sports media people are telling you that the Nuggets have been down 3-1 before, Kenny. We're not going to push that storyline. We're going to push this one. LeBron James, Anthony Davis. LeBron James, 26 points. Anthony Davis, 34. That equals 60. We did the math before the show, so you don't have to do it now. The winningest combinations in NBA playoff history, Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal once went 20-1 when scoring 60-plus points. Anthony Davis and LeBron James are now 18-1. The only other guys in the conversation are Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. They once went 26-2. And then Steph Curry and Kevin Durant went 18-2 using that 60-point barometer as the measuring stick.
That Steph and Klay thing is crazy. Those are two guards. That's crazy. That is insane.
Remember when Mark Jackson was laughed at for saying that might be the greatest backcourt of all time?
Yeah.
That laughing, it subsided really, really quickly.
The Lakers. Right he is.
The Lakers are 36-1 in a series when leading 3-1. I know you love stuff like that. As a matter of fact, the one that they lost was in 2006 to the Phoenix Suns. The fist pump. You brought that up. I completely forgot that the Lakers wound up losing that series to Phoenix that year when Kobe hit one of his iconic game winners at the buzzer, hits the fist pump and moves along. They wound up losing that series. That's the only time they've been up 3-1 and have lost.
I remember that one, game six. I think they were up. The Lakers were up with, I don't know, 10 seconds left or something. Phoenix shot a shot, missed it or whatever the case may be, ended up getting an offensive rebound. And check this name out. Tim Thomas with a bank three-pointer to send it to overtime and keep the Suns alive, and they end up winning that game, winning game seven. I remember that.
Tim Thomas was a made-up name. Knock it off. Do you want to complain about free throw attempts right now? Because what do we have here? I think LeBron shot, was it 12? LeBron 14. Shot 14, and I think Anthony Davis shot 14 as well. After each of them shooting two the game before, the Lakers brought it to the NBA's attention that they don't understand how players the size of LeBron James and Anthony Davis could only get to the foul line one time. I know you go to the foul line one time, you get to shoot two free throws. They got to the foul line once.
I mean, I said it last night. It was weak. And it's embarrassing. And then, you know, people tell me, well, all the teams do this. Well, all the teams should be embarrassed. Like, once again, I would be embarrassed, Damian, if I sent out a formal complaint to the league about not getting foul calls. Literally, as a player, as a general manager, I would be embarrassed. I would not sit up there and be like, oh, yeah, that's what everybody does. And the next game when I march to the line 15, 16 times thinking, oh, yeah, well, this is good. It's embarrassing. Please. Nobody trying to hear all that. Man up, as Shaq would say.
Because Shaq has never complained about getting fouled before.
No, he just says it inside the NBA.
Yeah, in a tone in which no one can hear what he's saying. Exactly. The Lakers won game two of this series against the Denver Nuggets. They went 105-103. They were outshot at the free throw line 33-19. Nothing? Okay. How about game four versus Houston? The Lakers shot 16 free throws and the Rockets shot 39. Lakers won by 10.
Okay.
I'm just pointing things out. Don't mind me. I'm just pointing stuff out.
Whatever happened. I'm not ever condoning formal complaints to the league about fouls. Never in my life will I.
Okay.
Never.
You're making too big of a deal out of this.
I just stated it. I mean, it is what it is. Like, I don't think that's why they won. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's definitely not why they won.
Yeah, I don't feel that way. So I'm not. I'm just stating that it's weak. It's a bad look. Like, I'm sitting up here.
What was it?
Oh, I got to make a formal complaint. Only went to the line two times, and then you're walking like Arthur. Hey. You know, like the Arthur meme to the free throw line in the next game. Please sit down somewhere. I hate that, and I love LeBron. I really do. I know it might seem like I don't. I love me some LeBron James. That's my guy.
But it very much does not seem like it.
It's weak, man. It's weak.
Okay. I like the reference to the, why are you so against formal complaints? Like, what if it was an informal complaint? Then would it be okay? What if they went Phil Jackson style or Pat Riley style?
Or Mike Malone style. You see reference to it.
Absolutely. Which is exactly what Mike Malone should do.
I fear that's fair game. I do.
So you're kind
of mentioning it or whatever. It's just something kind of shady about, oh yeah, Let me call the league. It's a lot of snitching involved. Yeah.
So calling the league is more upstanding than trying to manipulate the referees through the media.
You know what it is?
That's exactly what Phil Jackson, Mike Malone, and Pat Riley. We mentioned Mike Malone because he did it last night, and understandably so. He was perfectly in the right to do it. Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson is a Hall of Famer for it. Like, you could put him in the coaching Hall of Fame, and then you could put him in the manipulating the refs through the media Hall of Fame. Like, he is the penthouse level of that Hall of Fame. He was so good at it. Yeah, hell, he did it here.
You know what it is? It's the real life equivalent of the old school, the classic meme of the black guy holding the phone up. You know what I mean? That's what the formal complaint is to the league. It really is an embarrassing. And you know who also should be embarrassed? The referees should be embarrassed by routinely getting manipulated by Phil Jackson or all this other stuff. Like, you gotta grow a backbone, man. I made the call. I didn't make the call. That is what it is. Next time I'll try to get it. If I don't, it is what it is. Like, grow a backbone, man. Like, everybody in these scenarios are embarrassing. And is LeBron going to send the film of him fouling Jamal Murray at the end of the game? Is he going to send that to the league tomorrow? No.
Remember Barbecue Patty and all of those different.
That's exactly what Vogel and Genie Bus is looking like right now.
Is he Free Throw Frank? Is that what we're going to call him? Free Throw Frank for calling and telling the league that LeBron and Anthony Davis aren't going to the line enough?
It's just a bad look, man. I hate it. I really do. I hate it.
Free Throw Frank. Jamal Murray played well. Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic, 0 points. In the fourth quarter. That's the second time he's had 0 points in the fourth quarter. That's an odd stat to have, but I have it, so I'm presenting it. The fact is, the Lakers, they got out early. They got rebounds, which is not Anthony Davis, by the way. Anthony Davis was dead on the boards again.
That's bizarre. He had one rebound from, like, most of the game. He got a couple towards the end, but, man, that's bizarre.
I think he only finished with five. Yeah, and there was a point. Yeah, there was a point where he was non-existent. LeBron finished with nine. Orlando Magic Dwight Howard showed up yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had 12. He had 12 and 11, and most of those points were very, very early. He wound up playing 23 minutes. I think I could venture a guess that most of that 12 and 11 came within the first 12, 13 minutes of him playing. He had a fantastic performance yesterday. And Dwight, man, if you can get that Dwight a couple of times of a series, here's your NBA champions.
Yeah, get ready. And I'll say that, like, Figueroa. Yep.
Yeah, that is definitive. I don't know how many times you're going to get that from Dwight. It's a great performance. I'm a Dwight Howard. Well, I was a huge Dwight Howard fan. You talk about passive aggressive behavior. Dwight, I don't want to say Dwight Howard invented of it, but he might be on the Mount Rushmore of passive aggressive behavior in the NBA.
Yeah, Dwight always gets kicked out everywhere he's at. He's been a lot of places now. You know, for somebody that's going to make a Hall of Fame, like we talked yesterday, easily. It's no question Hall of Famer Dwight Howard.
Yep.
At one time MVP. He's been kicked out of a lot of places at this point.
Yeah. He was.
But he played great last night. And he's done great for the Lakers all year, really, to be honest with you, in that role.
Yes.
He's done a great job.
Something clicked with him this year. And I don't want to go because I felt like it clicked before February or January. But I think Kobe's passing had obviously it had an impact on everybody. But we knew Dwight's history with Kobe. We knew Dwight's history with the Lakers. Dwight talked about talking with Kobe before, you know, rejoining the Lakers and all of those different things. I think he really felt like, I honestly think he felt like, this is my absolute last chance. Mm-hmm. And I have got to get something going here. And that's just a tremendous performance from Dwight Howard, who was in the starting lineup yesterday. So the Lakers are up 3-1. Are the NBA finals set by the time we come back?
We come back on Monday.
By the time we come back on Monday.
Five and a possible six.
And the Heat could close it out tonight.
So Boston would have to win two for it not to be set.
They'd have to win tonight and they'd have to be Sunday.
Yeah, finals are set. I think the Lakers close out. Look, no disrespect. I said the other day I'm just going to stop disrespecting the Nuggets. So I'm not saying this in any disrespectful way. They ain't winning tomorrow. The series is done. I don't care what happened in the first round and against the Clippers. Lightning ain't striking three times. All right, this one's done. So they'll be done on Saturday. I think Boston wins tonight, but I don't think they win on Sunday. So, yes, I think the finals need, are set. Miami and the Lakers, NBA Finals.
They need a massive performance from, and it's not fair, but Boston really needs Gordon Hayward to be really, really good tonight. Yeah. And really good Sunday. And then really good in a potential Game 7. He needs to be really good moving forward.
Kimba's going to have to be a little better than he's been.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I would be, of course, I'm stunned that the Celtics are down 3-1. I would just continue to be stunned if they wound up losing. If they wound up losing tonight, if they lose Sunday, six games. Hopefully, we can see a little bit more 3-1 magic and get a seventh game out of this series, because I'd like to see it keep going.
I'd rather see 3-1 magic in the Lakers series, to be honest with you.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
Even though some of you may say I'm a Lakers fan, I would love to see them lose and embarrass themselves. It's not going to happen. Don't get it twisted. But make them squirm a little bit. Go to Game 7, Nuggets.
How did the Lakers fan thing start again? I know someone tweeted it, but
literally what happened.
You were being a broadcast journalist, and someone jumped on you?
The comment I made about giving the Nuggets some respect. I was like, okay. Yeah, man, I'm going to give them some respect. And then my homeboy, who knows I'm not a Laker fan, come up here and was like, man, that's why I like you, man. You know what I'm saying? It don't matter that you're a Laker fan. You show respect. I said, I ain't no damn Laker fan. What?
He said it so casually. It was so casual, too. It made me laugh. And then to see Jason Jones and everybody else jump on it, it was fantastic stuff. You're not going to believe this, Kenny. I have stunning news out of the Pac-12. They're going to play football. Not only is the Pac-12 going to play football, not only was the decision voted on yesterday, it's a complete reversal of where they were barely a month ago. Mm. Not only is the Pac-12 playing, so is the Mountain West.
Okay.
Everybody's coming back to play football here except the Ivy League. The Ivy League's like,
kids.
Yeah,
the smart kids are like, no.
Yeah. Y'all go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Enjoy. Have fun. Like, we're a hard pass here. They're looking to get the football season underway on October 24th. They set a couple, and this includes basketball, too, by the way.
Okay. No, I was just wondering, tie it in locally here. Does this mean the Big Sky's back?
We haven't gotten any love on the Big Sky yet. Yeah, you really, everybody might as well come back.
Yeah, might as well.
The collective college world is saying the hell with it. So, the hell with it. Come play.
Sac State really needs to get out of the Big Sky. I have no idea what they're doing in the Big Sky. Dude, nobody here cares about Montana or Eastern Washington. Get into a big, definitely in basketball, get into the Big West or something like that. But get out of the Big Sky.
And Sac State football was getting good, too.
Oh, yeah.
Man, Sac State football was getting good.
They were nationally ranked last year, weren't they?
Troy Taylor and everything that they had got going on, man.
Oh, just top 10 nationally ranked.
Just a brutal time for them to have a complete halt onto everything that they were building there. Pac-12 had there's a few key points worth pointing out. No fans will be allowed to attend games on Pac-12 campuses. Decision
last all year
will be revisited in January. So it's not going to be revisited during the college football season, but it could be revisited during the college basketball season. The football season can begin on November 6th. The conference championship will be December 18th, which is interesting because if memory serves me correctly, the college football playoff committee is meeting on December 11th. Now, there's a number of things to take into account here, including this is the Pac-12, and generally the Pac-12 stinks. And they very much struggle to be a part of the Final Four. I think maybe Washington.
Oh, that's harsh.
No, it's factual.
They don't stink.
In terms of being a part of the Final Four, in terms of being part of the college football playoff, yeah, they kind of stink. Like
Washington
Oregon.
Got beat up on.
Oregon is
Oregon
ninth.
Made the championship game.
And how'd that go?
They lost. Yeah.
Bad. It was bad.
It wasn't a complete beatdown, but it wasn't close, if that makes any sense.
No, it was a beatdown. This was menace
Zeke
to
Elliott, I remember.
This was menace to society curb stomp. It was bad. It was
they beat
not
the hell
good.
Out of Florida State to get there.
They beat it. I mean, that was Ohio State, wasn't it?
No, yeah, they lost to Ohio State, but I'm saying Oregon beat Florida State in the Rose Bowl. That was Jameis versus Mariota.
Because Florida State was disgustingly overrated.
Okay. Well, all I'm saying
Jameis
is
Winston getting that title.
The
only reason Jameis Winston in Florida State got that championship was because it was before the college football playoff committee. Before like an actual playoff. They got it the last year of the BCS where it was like, oh, we think Florida State's good because they're winning in the ACC.
No, that was a college football playoff, wasn't it?
No, I don't think so. I think that was the last year of the BCS. I think the first college football playoff was the one that you just referenced where Florida State got the crap kicked out of them.
Yeah, that's what no, okay.
The year that they won.
The one they won
was the BCS.
You meant the year they played Oregon was
was the BCS. Yeah. But in terms of the AP preseason rankings, Oregon's 9th, USC is 17th, and Utah's 22nd. Plus, they're going to be playing other Pac-12 schools. They're not even going to be able to compete for the college football playoffs.
Mm. Well, it won't matter. I don't think they're getting it anyway.
No, it wouldn't. You're right.
The date and all that other stuff. So,
Marshall Harris is set to join us coming up here at 1:30. It is a football Friday. It is a 49er Friday. There's some great games in the NFL. We'll preview those for you, and we'll give you our final thoughts on the 49ers and Giants. That's coming up here on Sacramento's home of 49ers football. It's D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
You're listening to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. Now, back to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
If you want to be a part of the conversation or even give us your picks for the weekend, 916-349-1320 at D'Lo and KC on Twitter and Instagram at ESPN 1320 as well. We pick the 49ers game each week. We pick the 49ers game, the Raiders game, as well as the primetime game Sunday night and Monday night as well. We always forget to get the Thursday night game, so I think we're just going to have to throw that one out of the conversation because I realized I didn't text.
Keep giving us this trash.
Kenny was obviously thrilled with the Dolphins and the Jaguars being on primetime television last night. I'm telling you, they're getting it out early. You said you had a fun fact for us as we return here.
Yeah, just something that came across my screen here in my studio that made me say, interesting. I'm not surprised by it, actually, but maybe
everybody
else is.
Would this be a thing that makes you go,
Yeah.
That was a deep, sorry.
That's a throwback right there.
Four people got it. Sorry.
They need to be way more than four people. They should definitely know that. Either or if anybody knew who, I don't know, Arsenio Hall was, you should definitely understand that.
We're aiming for a younger audience.
I saw this and blew my mind. Let me ask you, Damien, do you know who has given up the most yards per game dead last in the NFL? Through 2 weeks.
Who's given up the team that's given up the most yards per game?
Yep. It's at 485 yards per game is what they're giving up right now.
Well, off the top of my head, I'm thinking I'm going to guess it's a good team because if it was a bad team, I'm just thinking about the amount of points that have been scored. Seattle?
You're too good at this. You're too good at this.
Well, I was just trying to figure out who's 2-0. It was clearly a 2-0 team, and who's given up a lot of points. And I was drawn back to the great game with the Patriots the other night. I was like, okay, I was going to go either. I didn't think it was Kansas City because they didn't give up a ton their opening night. So it kind of
I keep saying, while I do think Seattle is upper echelon, I'm not shading them at all. You can move the ball on them. You can score on them. It was that way last year. Yeah, they got Jamal Adams, and that works out, but they don't have a pass rush after losing Clowney. Lost Bruce Irvin.
Yeah, that's tough.
They can be had. And that's them. Well, they lost Bruce Irvin, but basically healthy. Just pray that nobody gets hurt for them if you're a Seahawks fan.
Well, they got the Cowboys this week. It's in Seattle for, I don't know. I don't know. I feel the need to point it out. I don't know that it matters, but it is in Seattle. I don't know. I mean, we just saw the Cowboys put up a whole bunch of points in really short order. We know that they're capable of doing it. They only put up 17 in the opener against the Rams of Los Angeles. I don't know what team. I don't think the Cowboys have yet to look. Dak looked extraordinary the other day, but I felt like, you know, there's a story coming out of every game. and that game was about the Falcons. Mm-hmm. And it kind of the goofy ending and the goofy lapse of judgment by the Atlanta Falcons kind of took away from the performance because it was the overriding storyline.
Right.
Dak had a phenomenal game. But again, it was a team that gave up 39 points in a last second win. I don't know who they really are, but if your theory on Seattle is accurate, it might be 45-44 come the end of this game.
Yeah,
against the
Dallas defense ain't that much better.
Exactly. So I mean, I don't know. You know how I feel about the Seahawks. You know how I feel about Russell Wilson. We could see a situation where, you know, Russell Wilson has been tremendous at throwing the ball down the field. Like, he's got a ton of passes that are going 20 yards down the field before they're caught.
Yeah.
I mean, this looks like the prime team to do it against.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't think we're picking that game.
We're not picking it, but it is a marquee game.
Yeah.
Something to think about. I mean, if you're a 49er fan, you got to be a Cowboy fan this weekend. Yeah, I know that makes a lot of people's skin crawl, but
it does. I mean, mine is crawling as we speak. But, you know, just going off the grid here, I think the Cowboys are going to win that one. I think they're going to put up numbers.
You're just saying.
I think
they're
going to win that one.
Do you really mean that?
Yeah, Seattle's defense is trash, and if you have the offense that could take advantage of it, which I do think the Cowboys have. I definitely think you can have them. Like you said, it might be 45-41, right? Because Russell's balling. That Cowboys defense is almost trash themselves. So, yeah, it's going to be high scoring. But I think the Cowboys win that one. That's my pick. That's not an official pick, but that's my pick, if that makes any sense.
You want to take a guess at who the two best passers are throwing the ball 30 yards down the field since 2016?
Well, it's got to be Russell, number one. Or he's one of them. The second one.
Please don't think that hard. It's the quarterback that he's going against.
Dak, really?
It's Russell Wilson. It's Russell Wilson and it's Dak Prescott.
Wow.
Yeah, they're one and two in that category. To be fair, I don't know who he's tied with. He's tied. Dak Prescott is tied for second. The theory, you know, whether this is since 2016, so I don't know who else fits into that category. These are just some of the stats that ESPN shoots our way before each game. A couple of other marquee games. How about here locally? The Raiders. Are the Raiders for real? If they are, we're going to find out this weekend because they're going to be in Foxborough.
It's a big-time game for them, man. Big-time game. I think they're solid. I think they're a solid team, and regardless of what happens on Sunday, I'm going to feel that way. I think they're pretty good.
Is this... How many years did he coach with Tampa Bay? Like four? No, this can't be it. I'm trying to figure out if this is John Gruden's first trip to New England since the famous Tuck Rule game.
It has to be. Well, I shouldn't say.
Well, because if he coached with Tampa long enough, he might have gone there. But
might have.
But exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Are they for real? That's what we're gonna find out this weekend. You know how I feel about the Patriots. Particularly Cam Newton, but I don't know what to, I'm anxious in both fronts because I think that the Raiders are for real, but the Patriots need to bounce back and win. And this game is in New England again. I don't know what that means in 2020, but the game is in Foxborough.
He's not going to just let it happen now. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm not insane, but
you're saying that. I'm just saying the hoodie is going to have something ready for these boys. If John Gruden and the boys put up 34 on the hoodie, we got a story.
Is it fair to say he just needs to have something in store for Josh Jacobs? Belichick, is the game plan, hey, okay, if Derek Carr beats us, then more power to him. But right. We're going to eliminate... We're not falling for play actions. We're not falling for none of that. We're going to eliminate Josh Jacobs as best we possibly can from this game. And if Derek Carr beats us with his arm, God bless him.
That might be a dangerous proposition, though. Derek Carr's looked really good to start this season.
But I think he's looked really good because of how good Josh Jacobs has looked. And that's not meant to diminish what Derek Carr is doing. It's meant to point out that I think the game plan that John Gruden has implemented is working. Yeah. At least through two games, it's working. And I'd argue that game against the Saints was an impressive win.
It was.
And we can try to pick apart the Saints and pick apart Drew Brees and all of those different things. I think that was an impressive win. It was an impressive performance against a team that people still think very, very highly of, against many people, Super Bowl contender. And that was a moment where it was, oh, you got our attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Very maybe indirect research that I just did. This looks like it will be John Gruden's first trip back to Foxborough. Since the Tuck Rule game.
So, wow.
The ghost of Foxborough Pass. Look, man, I'm showing respect to the Raiders. Oh, we'll go to the pick later.
Okay. All right.
Just know that I'm probably never rooting for the Raiders. I can keep it a stack there. I ain't never rooting for the Raiders.
You don't have to root for anybody. I'm just a broadcast journalist here. Mm-hmm. Bills versus the Rams. Your Buffalo Bills.
There are my Buffalo Bills, yeah.
Against the Los Angeles Rams, a team that might shortly become mine, as I'm trying to figure out. Is this Ray Ratto said to us yesterday, well, I'm not there yet. I told him I thought this team was turning this the team might be for real. Ray, in his very dry delivery, said, okay, good for you, kid, because I'm not sure that they are.
Ray hit you with that Teddy Long, hold on, player.
Yeah, right? Pretty much.
You know what I'm saying? This is a good game, man. This is a good game. I think the Bills.
It's offense versus defense. I mean, yeah. I say that not giving Josh Allen a lick of credit for the fact that he threw for like 400 yards last week.
Yeah, show some respect.
You look at Buffalo as a defensive first team.
Yeah. I think the Bills get it done. My man Charlie, he's in our ear. He's telling me I'm wrong. John Gruden has gone back to Foxborough, so.
As the Bucs coach, I figured he had to be at the Bucs long enough to have gone to Foxborough.
Yeah, okay.
But still a fun story.
Let's go with the narrative.
He hasn't been
the first time as a Raiders head.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. So we'll go with that. But back to Bills Rams. Yeah, man. I just think playing on the East Coast and back-to-back games on the East Coast, 10 o'clock start. I think this is. I think the Bills get it done, man. I think they get it done. Jovan's gonna like that, but
Oh, he's gonna love it. Chiefs versus Ravens, an epic game to close out the Sunday night. The Chiefs and the Ravens. The Ravens have been great defensively. Both teams have been everything that you've expected them to be. I'm ready for this one.
This is big time right here. This is big time. This is my Super Bowl pick out of the AFC. The Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
Getting to show that they're for real again this year. I think they'll be ready.
But see,
I think they'll handle Kansas City.
See,
I shouldn't say handle, like beat them down. I'm not saying that. I think they'll win the game.
Okay, so the problem with the Ravens, though, is we're just waiting for the play. They're almost at that point where it's like, okay, they didn't do well in the playoffs last year. Fair or not, they didn't do well in the playoffs the year before. And so now they're kind of entering that territory. Okay, we've seen them be dominant in the regular season. We've seen Lamar Jackson win an MVP in the regular season. Now we need to see them win when it matters the most. This guy always wins when it matters the most. Of course, he's the host of Sports.
Not against me. Don't get it twisted.
Can I bring him in? Can I bring him in? He is the host of Sports Sunday on CBS 13 Sports Extra when it's on. Our man, Marshall Harris. Marshall, hi.
Hi, welcome Damian. Class, hi, Kenny. Marshall. How are you this beautiful Friday afternoon?
I'm good. Welcome to class.
You hear? This has been going class? On all. This has been going on all day.
Wait. Hold on. Did Kenny finally get some class? I'm so proud of you, Kenny. I really am.
Hey, man. I'm just here to educate, man. That's all I'm here to do.
You see what happens,
Kenny? I have a lot of books you can read to educate yourself. I really do. I have a list.
You see what happens when a brother says you're right one time. One time he says, you know what, Kenny, for once, you're right. And this is the version of Kenny we get every time Marshall Harris joins us. Marshall, we've got five different topics here we want to touch on. We want to hit a little beat here.
That's how we feel?
Since it's Friday. Yeah, it's Friday.
Okay.
I feel good. We've got plenty of things to talk about. Marshall, let's hit you with this one because you were a topic of conversation on the show just a couple of days ago as this rumor seemed to have sprouted up. More likely to be a 76er next year. James Harden or Buddy Hield?
It's not even close. It's definitely Buddy Hield. How is James Harden going to be a Sixer? Somebody needs to really draw up. Maybe the self-proclaimed teacher can educate me on how James Harden would end up on a Sixers roster next year. But I definitely got to say it's Buddy Hield.
You trade Ben Simmons. That's how you get James Harden. Now, whether or not
Rockets trading for Ben Simmons? Are you talking about like a three-way deal, a four-team trade? What are you talking about here?
Because they're ready to move on from James Harden. If that's what they're trying to do.
An MVP. They're ready to move on from their best player who's got how many years left on his contract?
So the biggest draw
in Houston, they're ready to move away from.
So for context purposes, for those who missed it, this was a rumor that seemed to have sprouted somewhere out of Philadelphia and it tied in Mike D'Antoni, and that the reason the Philadelphia 76ers had Mike D'Antoni at the top of their list, was because they believed that they could lure away James Harden and get him in a Philadelphia 76ers uniform.
I believe that was after his actual deal is up, though. When you talk about luring somebody away, I don't think his deal is up till 2022. Is that the long play you're doing with Embiid and Simmons on your roster? They got to win now. I want to remind y'all, because I think a lot of people forget. Maybe you guys are in that camp, Kenny especially, because, you know, he's got a foggy memory. But listen to this. Last year, how were the Sixers eliminated from the NBA playoffs? Can anyone in detail tell me exactly what happened?
The greatest shot in the history of the NBA postseason. Game 7.
And as a result of that, they decided to move on from Jimmy Butler.
I was about to say.
Bring in a big in Al Horford, and their season was an unmitigated disaster. I think we can all agree on that. But looking at where Jimmy Butler is right now, one win away from reaching the NBA Finals, I think you guys would be on board with me saying you should have just ran it back.
Absolutely.
Yeah, completely agree. Which is why I didn't understand if you were going to let Brett Brown go, why didn't you let Elton Brand go? Because I put this on him.
It's been, I believe, just under a month, maybe 3 weeks since the decision to let Brett Brown go happened. And I believe they said they were going to restructure their front office. I looked today, and the front office is the exact same as it was that day. That's restructuring taking some time, I suppose.
Well, Marshall, let me ask you this. You talk about they're in win-now mode. By my calculations, they're going to be the sixth best team in the East next year. I don't know what kind of win now that they're looking at, but with the team that they have right now, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, things of that nature, I mean, they're sixth best team going into next year.
Really? So sixth best team? Who are the five teams?
Milwaukee, Toronto, Miami, Boston, and Brooklyn. They're all better than Philly.
I'm not sure what's
going
to happen with Brooklyn. I really don't know. Boston, they beat them in a season series. Then when they played them in the playoffs, they didn't have their second-best player or arguably their best player.
I think the Sixers are going to be better next year than they were this year.
I really don't think they hit their floor this year. Could you imagine them being worse this year than they were last year?
The Sixers hit their floor?
Yeah. Their floor.
So you think they can be better than those five teams I mentioned?
I think, sure.
No way.
I don't know what they're going to do in the offseason. I don't know what roster adjustments they're going to make. Maybe they get Buddy Hield. I don't know what's going to happen, but they could definitely be better than they were last year.
Well, let's start
just like
with
they
a coach.
Were worse last year than they were the year before, correct?
Yeah, let's get them a coach and let's kind of go from there and see what they're able to implement.
Maybe you need to teach your partner about foresight and plugging in some holes before we make bold predictions.
They can have whatever coach they want. If their point guard refuses to shoot, none of it matters.
Moving along here, should Major League Baseball? We've got the Giants competing for a playoff spot. We've got the Oakland A's in their playoff spot locked up. Marshall, I ask you this: should Major League Baseball keep the expanded playoff format moving forward?
You're asking me as a fan, or you're asking me from the perspective of Major League Baseball itself?
I'm asking you from a fan's perspective.
Oh, well, the answer is the same either way. Yes, of course they should. What? 162-game season, 6 months long. In month five, most teams are out of the playoffs picture. But you're saying next year, if we keep the 16-team format, most teams would still be in the playoff picture past the trade deadline? Yeah, we're going to go ahead and keep that. Oh, and also, everyone's making money. More money.
But is – okay. I was going to say, is that a good thing? Obviously, making money is a fantastic thing, mm-hmm. but is having teams that are potentially well under 500 in the playoff picture at the end of the year, is that a good thing?
I mean, it's the playoffs, man. Like, just make it happen. I mean, let me ask you this. Did Kimbe Mutombo laying on his back, holding up the basketball, did you enjoy that picture when he was in the Denver Nuggets uniform?
Sure, sure.
Oh, see, oh, okay. You're a fan, right? You enjoyed it as a fan, correct?
Sure, and I did the We Believe Warriors was a cool so moment as well, but those two really stand out.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think fans, baseball fans at large, would enjoy seeing, I don't know, we'll go local here, Mauricio Dubon hitting a walk-off home run, maybe not a walk-off home run because they won't have home field advantage, but a game-winning home run in the ninth inning against the Dodgers to move the Giants past the Dodgers in the first round?
I'm going to guess they would, yes.
So, what's the problem? Yeah, help me understand what the problem is.
That's local. I don't think anybody in Milwaukee would give a damn about the Giants beating the Dodgers.
And
I think they would definitely rather see the Dodgers versus the Yankees or Dodgers or even versus the A's. Like, Marshall,
why are you buying into this national perspective?
I'm not wrong about? They should not have this playoff format moving forward. Absolutely should not. It devalues a regular season that already people think is too long and don't watch. Why would I watch if a 500 team is going to make the playoffs?
And you know why? Because there's a difference between baseball and these other sports you're talking about. Here's the biggest difference between baseball and all the other major sports that you're talking about. MLS maybe is on the same page with baseball on this, but because of the number of games and the fans that can actually have access to the games, especially late in the season, really in the middle, any time in the season, it's about the event. It's about getting people into the stands. I think more people will go to games because teams will be deemed in it, and it's an outing anyway. You don't have access to an NFL game or an NBA game. Those tickets are very expensive. You ever paid for tickets to an NHL game? Very expensive. You can take $10, go on StubHub, and go sit in the upper deck in pretty much most parks, I would say. And, like, that's part of it. That's a way to grow your fan base. I think this is smart from every metric. I understand what you're saying, but baseball isn't a national sport anyway. So it's a regional sport. So your teams and the fans that follow your teams are going to be way more hyped about being in a playoff race the longer into the season. And then when the playoffs start, more fan bases are going to be engaged. Because let's be honest, are Giants fans going to pay attention to the playoffs if the Giants aren't in it?
Yes, the playoffs are. I agree. I agree with you. I agree with you on that aspect. The regular season is regional. I agree with you on that last part. I agree with you.
Okay.
I agree with you. The playoffs are national. Number one, you'd have to extend it.
They're not. Not if you're baseball. They're not national if you're baseball. Have you seen the ratings?
Oh, no, they're absolutely national. They're absolutely national. Giants fans definitely care about what's going on in the playoffs when they're not involved.
That's one market.
I think New York is the same way. I think the playoffs is the one thing that Major League Baseball has going for them.
Kenny, stop talking in circles. You just told me no one in Milwaukee cares. You just told me that.
No, they don't care if the Giants win. Like, they want to see the best teams. The Giants are not one of the best teams. They're not. Nobody wants to see the eighth seed in the World Series. Like, all that Cinderella stuff and March Madness is all good until you got George Mason versus UW Milwaukee in Elite Eight. Nobody wants to watch that.
I enjoyed
when they went to the Final Four. That's false.
Yeah, because they played Duke, not because they played Pacific.
Wow, really?
David versus Goliath. David versus Goliath. Nobody wants to see two Davids.
A shot at Damon Stoudemire. Let's move along here.
Like a straight bullet.
I love Damon Stoudemire. If you're listening, buddy, I love you. I got to get to a Pacific game, man. He's doing good things over there.
Too late now.
I don't want to see them versus Butler.
We just had our season credentials revoked. Did the Lakers complaining to the league affect the way last night's game was called, Marshall?
Of course it affected the way last night's game was called. Just like when they send in video of Jokic getting fouled last night and Jamal Murray taking contact, that'll affect the way game 5 is called. Like, that's the reality of how it works when you have human beings officiating. It's subjective. It's as objective as it can be, but it's still subjective. Like, you see this, you see that. I mean, come on, man. It's basketball. It's the NBA. There's a reason you can challenge now, you know?
Once again, I agree with you, Marshall. Let me ask you a question. I think it's embarrassing that the refs are able to be swayed in that way anyway. Like, do you feel the same way about that? Like, is there any onus on the refs to be like, look, man, like, don't just because somebody complained, give the other team a bunch of calls the next night?
You know what it is? I just believe if you're going to call a tight game, call a tight game. If you're going to call a loose game, call a loose game. It's got to work for both sides. That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't have a problem with them sending in the video, as they always do, about you missed these calls and, you know, the two-minute report. Obviously, the last 2 minutes, they tell you what they missed. I don't have a problem with all that because, you know, there's accountability, there's culpability, there's everything. I just think when you look at these two teams in the final four of the NBA, you've got to call it both ways the same, you know? If it's insignificant contact and you're calling fouls on one end, you got to call the foul on the insignificant contact on the other end. If you're letting them play through it, you got to let them do it on both ends. And you can't change in the last minute of the game.
Let's hit a couple of more.
I hate complaining about referees. Like, that's one of the top three things I hate in all the sports. I hate it.
Let's shift to the NFL here as we wrap things up. What 2-0 team, Marshall Harris, are you just not buying?
You know what? This is personal for me, guys.
Uh-oh.
This is personal. Okay? My favorite NFL team is 2-0.
I think
as much as I want to buy what they're selling, especially at the quarterback position, I am thankful that they face another 2-0 team this week, and we can find out what's really good. The Buffalo Bills are that team.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly, right?
So you're not buying them?
I'm not buying them yet. Listen, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. How am I going to buy them? I've seen it so many times.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Now, if they beat the Rams this weekend, who are 2-0 and from the best division in all of football, we can have a different conversation next week. But right now, it's the Buffalo Bills and it's not close.
Settle this for me, Marshall. Settle this for me. Are the Bills going to win the AFC East?
You know, I want to say...
They're going to Marshall, believe. It's going to happen this year, okay? You've heard it here first. It's going to happen. Believe. It's okay to do it.
Did you see Cam Newton on Sunday night?
I did. He looked good. They're going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're winning that division.
It's Cam winning. It's the Patriots winning that division. Come on now.
Listen, after seeing Cam Newton Sunday night, why would you believe that Bill Belichick, who has owned that division for how many years in a row?
Ever number of years.
Because I saw them get lit up like a Christmas tree on the defensive end, give up 5 touchdowns. That's why.
To who?
To Russell Wilson.
Okay, so like, and also,
Marshall, you talk about, you know, seeing what Cam did or whatever the case may be. I don't know if you heard the conversation before you came on, but who has the worst defense in the game right now?
Yeah, that's the Seahawks.
Seattle Seahawks.
In case you missed that. A lot of yards per game. So this is actually the perfect segue as we're talking about 2-0 teams, Marshall. A team that you got to cover this weekend. Are the Raiders for real or no?
Are the Raiders for real or no? I'm going to have to say, I want to say let's wait till after the game, but, you know, that's not how
that's
this
the easy,
works.
That's
gotta,
the easy
I,
answer.
I got to make
up.
That's the correct answer. I just want to make sure that you understand. I do understand the correct answer. But for entertainment purposes and for radio, I will let you know that I do think the Raiders are for real because I think their offense is much improved.
Well, think so,
again,
too.
We agree.
Yeah, wow.
What the hell
is going on
here?
Yeah, what weird freaky Friday are we involved in?
I don't think it's a freaky Friday, though. I think Kenny's got some sense. I was about to say, he was so excited last week about being right for one. He was like, well, let me really do my homework this week and make sure I have the correct takes so when Marshall comes on, I can be in his camp. You're doing great, sweetie. You're doing great.
Like I said, what's going on is the fact that Marshall is taking his sports education seriously. He studied me. He's letting me educate him. And now he's being sensible with the things he's saying, except for this whole Philadelphia thing. But look, Rome wasn't built in a day. That's why we have a whole school year.
One day.
So you think James Harden's going to be on the Sixers? Is that what you're saying?
No, you're right about that. You just don't think that Philly
is. Say it one more time. What about it?
You're right about this, Buddy Hill, but you think Philly somehow can win the Eastern Conference or something next year, being the top five? No, they're clearly.
I didn't even
say
they could win the Eastern Conference. To do what you just to counter what you said, they don't need to win the East. All they would literally have to do is win in the first round of the playoffs. That's literally all they would have.
That ain't happening. They're not even going to have home court advantage next year. They're the sixth seed in the East next year.
Can we make a wager right now? Just because can we just make some type of wager?
I mean,
What
do you sip on, Marshall? What do you sip on, man? I'll buy you a drink, man.
Let's make this wager offline, and let's wrap up today's show, and let's thank Marshall Harris and remind everybody that they tune into Sports Sunday this Sunday coming up at 11:30 p.m. when the 49ers game will be final, when the Raiders game will be final, and perhaps we'll have a better idea of whether the Raiders are for real or perhaps whether his Buffalo Bills are for real. Marshall, we appreciate you as always. Man. Thank you, my man.
I appreciate the time. Kenny, you did better this week. I'm proud.
Good job. Everybody watch Marshall every weekday night on 13, Channel 13.
There,
man.
There you go. Marshall Harris, CBS 13.
I think it's just me.
Flow guy.
He's back now. Yeah, it was just me for a quick second.
I don't think he knew. Yeah, I'm having an issue over here. I noticed it sometime during that during that call. I'm old school right now. Mm. I have a cable hooked up. Like, I'm not even rolling Wi-Fi. Like, I actually have that blue Ethernet cable hooked up. I don't know what's going on, man. I don't know why the internet hates me. I have no idea. But you know what it is?
Something to the internet? I mean, what?
You know what? My internet is MetLife Stadium. That's what it is. And I'm the San Francisco 49ers last week against the New York Jets. That is what has been happening over the course. Thankfully, it's nothing catastrophic where I was booted off. I was carted off like Nick Bosa a couple of weeks ago. But fun
too
thoughts
soon,
over there.
By the way. Too soon.
I know. Well, no, it's not too soon because we got to get right back at it. We've got game day coming up Sunday, 8 o'clock. We're going breakfast style once
this
again,
the last
eight
time.
To nine.
Last time of the year, we're going breakfast with D'Lo and KC on 49ers game day. I'm really going to have some blueberry waffles this time.
Okay. You're going to have Eggos. They're not the same.
They're definitely the same.
No, there's Eggos are something. Blueberry waffles are something entirely different. Blueberry waffles, you need a mixing
Eggos,
you need a mixing pan, a mixing bowl, and a waffle maker.
Stop
with that stuff.
Eggo
you barely need a toaster with an Eggo.
Stop it. Show
you don't even need a plate. You just you just like rip it apart and eat it.
That is Eggo. That's an institution. That's an institution of this country. Eggo.
That says a lot about this country if it's an institution of this country. We've got game day again coming up at 8 o'clock. We hope that you will be with us. And we're back immediately following or shortly after the conclusion of the 49ers and the Giants. Our final thoughts on this. It's obviously, Kenny, a game that the 49ers need to win. We know that the New York Giants aren't very good. We know both teams are severely, severely depleted. We know now Nick Mullins is going to be the starting quarterback. We know that Raheem Mostert's not going to play. We know that George Kittle is not going to play. We know that Nick Bosa is not going to see the field again. Solomon Thomas isn't going to see the field again. Tevin Coleman's not playing. Deebo Samuel's playing. There are a lot of Pro Bowl players in the San Francisco 49ers uniform that aren't going to be on the field. Sterling Shepard isn't playing for the Giants. Saquon Barkley is done for the year. That is a laundry list of guys that aren't playing, and still, when it all boils down to it, the San Francisco 49ers aren't only a better team, they're a much better team.
They are. One of my favorite teams in recent years from the San Francisco 49ers was the 2013 team. It was the third year Harbaugh was in charge. They lost the NFC Championship game on the Sherman Tip in Seattle and all this other stuff. But, man, they were tough. They were tough physically, but they were tough mentally because they kind of knew they were coming to, you know, their window was closing. But, man, it was a tough team mentally, and you couldn't shake them. Like, if you beat them, you were just going to have to beat them. They were not going to beat themselves. They were not going to wilt under any pressure. They were tough. I'm getting some vibes with this team. I know it's early. I know they haven't even played a game, you know, without Bosa and after all the injuries and everything. But I'm just getting vibes that this could be that type of team where they face so much adversity. They face injuries. They face schedules. They face all the all the adversity of being a Super Bowl losing team coming back the next year and all this other stuff, so all the stats, and they just keep grinding forward. They just keep grinding. It don't matter. And I think I saw a little bit of that on Sunday. That's maybe why I feel that way, because it was catastrophic to see those guys go down the way they did. And they just buckled down, man. They saw their quarterback go down, and they just buckled down, and they kept playing, and they kept executing. And that's what I'm looking for this Sunday. You're not going to get all the answers, but I want to see them go back into MetLife and with the ghost of MetLife's turf, go out there and handle business, man. Handle business on Sunday.
The only thing that concerns me a little bit more about this week against the Giants versus last week against the Jets, we know that Bosa and Solomon Thomas went down really early. Mm-hmm. Raheem Mostert started that offense. He got them on the scoreboard on the first play of the game. Like we have mm-hmm. talked about all of this week, the importance of that. The importance of that last touchdown from Jimmy Garoppolo to Jordan Reed before going into halftime, that gave them a cushion. That gave the 49ers a cushion headed into the half where it's like, okay, we're down our big boys now. Kittle never stepped on the field. Debo never stepped on the field. Now we're without Jimmy Garoppolo. Not even Raheem Mostert's going to play. Tevin Coleman's going to get beat up somewhere along the way. We know what just happened to our defense. They had a nice little cushion before they had to walk out there for that second half. Now, obviously, they even at that, they played, you know, well enough to more than well enough to win the game. We're starting at a level playing field this weekend. We're starting where I don't think the New York Giants game planned for Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm just guessing. I don't think they game planned for Raheem Mostert or George Kittle or anyone like that. And you have two teams pretty much who are starting out on a level playing field, 0-0, come this Sunday at 10 o'clock. That's my only concern, is there's no Raheem Mostert first play of the game. There's no Jordan Reed right before halftime. I'm a little bit concerned about that, but again, I still think this is a 49ers game. Obviously, it's a game that they have to win, because unlike the New York Giants, this team has aspirations that run well and, you know, deep into the postseason. Yeah. And they can't be derailed this week, especially with Philadelphia coming up next week. You're coming back home. You'll be at home for the first time in a couple of weeks. I know Philadelphia is easy to dump on right now. We talked about 2-0 teams with Marshall that we don't believe in. I don't know in terms of 0-2 teams. I don't know that Philadelphia is that bad. No. You know, this week we'll certainly tell a story if they're heading into Levi Stadium at 0-3. And I don't know that I wouldn't be more concerned about an 0-3 Philadelphia team versus a 1-2 Philadelphia team. But this isn't a game they can play around with.
No, not to overlook the Giants, but I'm going to give you a quick preview on that Eagles game. I think they'll beat up on the Bengals and go 1-2, and they are going to be a hungry 1-2 team coming into San Francisco looking to salvage their season and get back to 500. That's the way I look at what that situation is going to be.
And the NFC East is terrible. So they're looking at it like, we don't have to do much. Yeah. We just get going, and we could wind up winning this division easily.
Damian, they could win on Sunday and be tied for first place.
It's as simple as that.
It's simple as that. So that's what's going on week four. As far as this week, I'll leave you on this. I think Nick Mullins is going to play really well. I think Nick Mullins is going to have a good game on Sunday. I think he's ready. I think he's been looking for this situation. He looks at it as an opportunity. This is an opportunity for him. That's how he looks at it. I think he's ready for it. I think he plays really well on Sunday. Niners win.
You going Charles Barkley style?
Guaranteed.
Nick Mullins plays really well.
I'm not doing anything Charles Barkley does right now.
Okay.
I'm upset with Charles Barkley. I'm not doing anything he does right now.
Understand. But I'm with the Nick Mullins play. I think he's a serviceable backup quarterback, perhaps a better than serviceable backup quarterback. Also, sorry to point this out again for the third time, the Giants are bad, and that's what this boils down to. The Giants are bad. The 49ers are not. They still have a better defense, even with Nick Bosa gone, even when Solomon Thomas is gone. Kenny and I will be back with you Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. We hope that you will join us in preparation for your Sunday of football, in preparation for your San Francisco 49ers. And if you're not around in the morning, come back post-game. We'll be with you to cover the San Francisco 49ers. And, of course, we'll be back on Monday. If you missed any part of today's show, you can catch us on demand on the radio.com app. Damon, Rattle, and Kolsky are coming up next here on Sacramento's home of 49ers football, ESPN 1320.
Let's go.
D'Lo and KC on the home for Sacramento Sports Talk, ESPN 1320.